Hello, and welcome to How to Make a Memory, the show that explores the items we make for one another and how they impact our relationships. My name is Jen Tierney, and my guest this episode is Jo Lager. She is an accomplished knitter and bread baker, and I am lucky enough to be related to her by marriage. She is my father-in-law's cousin, and somehow we've always missed each other at various family gatherings. And since she lives close by, this past fall I invited her to come by for a meal, to meet my kids, and to record this episode. Jo is a pleasant conversationalist, and I found that in no time at all, we were touching upon some similar sibling dynamics that we've experienced in our own immediate families.
Thank you for coming and visiting me at my house and coming to be on the show. So this is the second time we're meeting, I think.
Yes.
But the first time seems like we mostly missed each other.
Yeah. At a big family gathering.
Yes.
My mother told me that you were slightly fanatical about knitting.
Yes.
Like me. Uh-huh. She considers me to be slightly fanatical about knitting.
You are excellent at it. Senior stuff's much better than mine.
So I was interested, and I think I actually saw something that you had posted on Ravelry at the time, and I was like, I think I know that, Tierney.
Yes.
Seriously, Jo is a very talented knitter. You can peruse through her many projects over on Instagram at SoJoLala. I've included a link in the show notes.
So, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, very good.
I think I consider myself, as a maker, primarily a knitter. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy knitting, and I always have a knitting project going. Mm-hmm. And I learned to knit when I was 5. Mm-hmm. At the time, I knew how to do some embroidery. My mom had taught me how to do some embroidery, and I made some little embroidery flowers and things like that. And I had a friend coming over from school, and when we were planning what we were going to do, she said, do you know how to knit? And I said, yes. And then I was like, I had some inkling that maybe sewing and knitting were the same thing.
Yeah.
So I asked my mom, do I know how to knit? And she said, no, but I can show you. So she taught me how to knit then. And I did some knitting when I was growing up. When Cabbage Patch Kids were a craze, I made Cabbage Patch Kids sweaters. Although I think it's funny because my mother, you know, like we got to the collar and I left the collar on a stitch holder for a really long time because my mom was like, oh, you probably can't do that part.
Yeah.
And I probably could have, but she was like, Anyway, and then when I went to college, my older sister had gone to college and had decided she was going to make a quilt while she was in college. And she made this beautiful hand-sewn quilt while she was in college. And so I was like, I'm going to college. I need a project. So I, and neither of my older sisters did knitting. So it was kind of like, could
Your
be my thing.
Right.
So I started out making a blanket, which I think I got halfway through and decided I didn't like the yarn. It wasn't fun to make. So that eventually went to a yard sale. But then my oldest sister got pregnant and I was like, ooh, baby clothes.
Yes, it's perfect.
Fun to make, right?
Yeah.
You know? So I made lots of things for my first nephew. And since then, I've really continuously been a knitter. Although when I had my son, I didn't knit a lot when he was little.
It changes a lot of things.
Yeah.
I've had so many projects that I've started and I've sort of committed to, and I talk to people about it, and they're like, you're not going to work on that for another 10 years. Just calm down about it. It's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you've got little kids.
Yeah.
So trying to come to terms with that is hard.
Yeah.
Especially when you make so ferociously before you have kids. And all of a sudden you can't anymore.
Yes. So. But my son is now 13. Mm-hmm. And then you can again.
Yes.
Like, suddenly they're doing their own things and you have a lot more time to do your own things
your
again.
Own stuff.
So.
Yeah.
As someone who is constantly overextending, overpromising, and overcommitting to a variety of projects, I so appreciate this glimpse into the future, this light at the end of the tunnel. I'm getting ready to welcome a new little infant into the house in just a few months, so me time seems further away than ever before. But Jo very kindly puts it into perspective for those of us who need to remember the impermanence of our young families.
Yeah, I at one point took up spinning, but I realized that I was buying yarn and I was buying fiber.
Yes.
And it just was like compounding the problem of having too much stuff and not enough time because I didn't want to just make yarn. I also wanted to buy yarn. I actually realized I liked buying yarn more than I liked making yarn. Mm-hmm. So but then I I sold my spinning wheel to someone a couple years ago, and then I was like, oh, all these people I know are spinning, and it looks so cool. And I find one of the nice things about knitting is that it's so portable, right? I don't have a lot of time to just sit in my house and do things, and I like to sew and I like to spin. But and when I'm there, I've got lots of other things to do. Mm-hmm. So I like that I can grab my knitting and go out, either go to a cafe and meet friends and knit together, or knit while I'm commuting, or while I'm waiting, while I'm going to my son's hockey games, you know, waiting for the game to start, that I can do it then.
Most of my projects, unless I'm working on like a very large blanket that's far along, most of them get done outside of the house. It's one of the great things about it is that it's got a modest amount of gear for a hobby. Right. Like there are some hobbies that just have such a colossal amount of gear, and they keep you really tied
planted
to a place.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a 30-minute walk as part of my commute, and I knit while I'm walking now, which is great. As long as you have a pattern that's easy enough, you can just do it while you go, and it's really great.
One of the things that's changed what I like to do in my spare time is what I'm doing while I'm working. When I was working in the hospital and on my feet all the time, then I liked having sitting in front of the TV doing. But when I spent my whole day sitting at a desk, then I was like, I can't do that when I'm home. So, and then I was doing more baking and other things just because they're active and on my feet and not sitting there like a lump.
Yes, absolutely. I spend very little time now watching something or listening to something while I knit. It's mostly like active time or outside of the house time. But I used to have blankets that I made that I called like, oh, this blanket was my Buffy blanket. Like I watched the entire series of Buffy while I made this blanket. Yeah. And, you know, I'd tell people when I gave it to them, like, this is your, you know, your marriage blanket or your housewarming blanket. Right. But also, it's the Dexter blanket. You know what I mean? That's what I watch.
If you see any blood splatter, don't be surprised. Yeah.
So it's fun to be able to sort of think about projects in that length for me, because you know I can sort of be like, okay, this project's going to take me about 80 hours. What is about 80 hours long that I can watch while I do this? And I don't really do it that way anymore, but now I think about it in terms of like, how many trips back and forth from work is this project?
I recently, in the past year, I commute from New Hampshire to Cambridge. It's a long commute. I recently found a vanpool, which is awesome. Because then most days I can sit and knit and listen to an audiobook or awesome.
I've had so many different commutes over the years. I recently read that the average American commute is 40 minutes, which is why so many podcasts strive to be in that 30 to 40 minute range. My life has been forever transformed by the discovery of podcasts and learning to knit while in motion.
Aside from the earliest projects you worked on, what are some of the big things you've finished that you've been most proud of?
Yeah. Well, I just finished a sweater that I am totally in love with. So it's turquoise and gray, and it's a yarn that was hand-dyed by a lady that's in the town next to where I live. And it's half merino and half silk. And so it's just beautiful fiber. And it has, it's called the new sweater, N-O-U-X, and it has a kind of color work yoke, and it just, I like everything about it.
It's yeah.
It fits, it has a nice drape, it, you know, it's a nice weight for wearing any time of the year except the hottest days of summer, so, and this time is so short around here anyway,
I know, it's true.
One of the other projects I made that I really like is I made this, I knitted an anatomically correct octopus. Like,
That's fantastic.
Mean, it is quite, it's one skein of fingering weight yarn, and it has like the spout, and it has all the little suckers on the tentacles.
That's
and,
really interesting. Yes,
my son asked for it, and I guess I made it for him, but he's never really used it, but I love it, so. And I guess the fact that I was willing to make it for him counts for something.
I've had a few people request interesting things like that, and I've never really, only in the last maybe year or so have I gotten into creating little dolls or things like mm-hmm. that. I've always made items you can wear for the yep. most part. But I got commissioned to make a set of minions for a guy in town uh-huh. a little while ago. And I, after I determined whether or not it was okay for me to legally make minions.
Right.
I was like, oh, I don't know. But I had a friend ask me to make him an anatomical brain mm-hmm. With like the brainstem and all that. And I was just like, I wouldn't know where to begin. I looked for patterns, and patterns exist for such right. things, you know, but it looked like such a...
Yeah, I'm not sure you know, that would be... Yeah.
It's like, I don't know that I have the time to make this thing, because well, it has so many parts to it.
I find doing things on commission, unless yes. you really love it yourself, mm-hmm. and some of mm-hmm. the value in it is satisfaction for yourself, there's yeah. no way someone could ever pay you enough money to do it.
No.
Right?
No,
to yeah. make it... I mean, if it's... If there's... value in the making for yourself and you really love it, yeah. then maybe.
But. Yeah. The thing with the minions was that I had tried crocheting for the first time to make a Hobbs doll for my husband for Father's Day a few months before our son was born. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is for Joey, but I'm giving it to you for Father's Day because you're going to be a dad again. And it was the first thing I had crocheted. And I posted a picture of it online and this guy was like, I would love for you to make minions. And I did it mostly because it had taken me a really long time to make the Hobbs doll because it was brand new. I hadn't learned right. how to do it really well yet. And I was like, I want to get good at this. So yeah. for me, that was sort of like
yeah.
why I could do it. But yeah, anytime I am not making something as a gift, it's really hard to do. And I've tried a few times to knit things and then give them to a shop in town that sells things. Mm-hmm. Kind of consignment. But yeah, she sells mm-hmm. things from local artisans. And I just can't get myself to put down the projects for friends and gifts and things long enough to actually create anything to bring over to that woman
right.
who would love to have stuff. And I just, you know, can't
yeah.
get
yeah.
myself motivated to actually do it. And part of it is that, you know, like, if I make a baby hat, which is probably the fastest, least expensive thing that mm-hmm. I can make, it still took me 4 to 5 hours.
Right.
I can't charge $50 for a tiny baby hat. Like, right, that's right, insane. Right. Who would pay that?
Right. And if she's only giving you half of I know. What she's going
to
sell it for.
So yeah. it just doesn't make sense to do.
Yeah.
And I think there are crafts out there that lend themselves more to consignment, like sewing, for
right.
instance.
Right. You can do some production
you
sewing.
Could, yeah, yeah. You could definitely churn some things out, but not...
Yeah. No, not knitting.
Not knitting.
I found it funny. Sometimes people say, oh, yeah, you should sell that. And I'm like, but you don't understand. Is that I paid more for this yarn mm-hmm. than I would pay for a sweater.
Yeah.
So there's just no way. No. I mean, the value in it is the value for me.
Yes.
There's no way that someone else could compensate me for that mm-mm. value.
So. Yeah. So one of the things that I found after I started knitting that I wasn't expecting was that it became very meditative for mm-hmm. me. And eventually I started using it as a stress relief activity. And I started making things that weren't for anyone necessarily, but just like, oh, I'm going to make this thing
yeah.
and
yeah.
and then I'll figure out what to do with it later.
Right.
And I found holes
yeah.
for everything
right.
over time.
Right.
But yeah, it sort of became more about the activity to me.
And the process,
about,
yeah.
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 And it's just getting into that place where your brain can sort of shut off and all you're doing is thinking, okay, knit, knit, purl, purl, knit, knit, purl.
Right, right.
And that's it. And everything else goes away. I can't get there when I... purposely meditate, when I sit and try to, like, clear my mind, can't do it. Yeah. I go to a yoga class
yeah.
at the end of yoga when we have those, like, 5 minutes of just
right.
laying there. My mind's, like, all over the place.
Yeah. And I have done a little meditation. I think part mm-hmm. of the purpose of meditation is to realize
mm-hmm.
how many different places your brain is running
yeah.
all the time.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I think that whole exercise of trying to sort of clear your mind is, it can be frustrating and satisfying and stressful and relieving. And it
yeah.
sort of, you know, has that tension to it,
right.
which is good. Which I think is the exercise part of that exercise.
Yeah.
is
yeah.
how it has that
yeah.
push and pull to it.
I think it's always funny with people who are learning to knit,
mm-hmm.
who come wanting it mm-hmm. to be a stress relief. And they're mm-hmm. sitting there with their elbow, you know, their shoulders mm-hmm,
yep,
and their ears and, you know,
super
like
tight.
Doing each stitch. And they're like, what do you mean? This is supposed to be relaxing
mm-hmm.
right now. And it does set up this expectation
yeah.
that, you know,
it's
it
true.
Takes some, I find it very interesting that as adults, We so little have the opportunity to do something we're not good, or give ourselves the opportunity to try something that we're not good at.
Yes.
And practice doing some meditation or knitting or whatever else that we're not good at.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to just keep doing the things that we're already good at.
Yes.
It's a very good to remind yourself that it's okay to not be good at things and to keep trying them.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's an interesting thing that we kind of lose as adults, is the ability to feel okay with looking kind of dumb.
Right.
Like, I don't know what I'm doing and I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
This is an incredibly challenging hurdle for me and so many other adults that I know. As we age, our inner critics often grow with us and so often stand in the way of us making something that isn't quite at the level we intended to be one day. I envy all of you out there who can silence that pesky inner voice so that you can learn and grow without standing in your own way. All right, let's talk about bread baking.
So you primarily knit, and then you also use sourdough for
your bread. Yeah, I'm a sourdough user, it's so true.
how old is your starter?
Well, I've kept sourdough starter for, I don't know, over a decade.
Really? Same one?
No, I did have to replace it because at some point it got really neglected. And actually, it was like a year and a half ago, it had been really neglected. And then I tried to rev it up. And then I tried to make sourdough bread for my family for Thanksgiving. And it was like a hockey puck. It didn't rise at all. So I bought some new starter from King Arthur.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Oh, cool.
And it's funny because since that Thanksgiving, I actually haven't made a loaf of bread again. I use the starter every week to make
I don't make bread as often as I make other things.
But yesterday I made bread, and the wonder of the little bubbles of air inside the bread made me very happy. Because that was the first time I'd made bread again since
my unsuccessful bread.
And it was funny because my nieces and nephews were all like, Auntie Jo's making bread. And they're like, what happened to the bread? I'm like, there is no bread.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, the first time I made bread, I watched Michael Pollan's Cooked series on Netflix. And that was when I was like, I will get into bread baking.
Yeah.
And that's usually what it takes for me, is I see one person do it really well and I go, well, I will do that thing. And so I made it. I bought my King Arthur flour and I got my distilled water. Well, I started off with regular tap water, which was my mistake. Eventually I learned distilled water. Do that, Jen.
And we have well water, so I don't have to worry about
that's
that.
That's nice. Yeah, we have the, you know, town water.
Right.
So I made it and I let it do its thing for its 5 days. I fed it every day and I threw some out. And eventually it looked bubbly. And I just was like, okay, it's ready to make bread. And I just found like the first from scratch sourdough bread recipe I could find, which was good, but it was for someone who had an advanced starter and was an advanced bread maker.
Right.
And I was just like, I will do this. And so I made the bread and I was like, I'm going to bring this down to Connecticut for Thanksgiving, because it was then.
Right.
And it was two Thanksgivings ago now, I think. And I brought it down with me and everybody ate it because they were very, very, very polite. But it was basically inedible. It was so hard and so unpleasant. What I do now, because I don't want to torture myself, is I found this really nice...
So did you did your starter from Wild? The yeast is wild yeast.
It's wild yeast,
You didn't get an established starter.
Yeah, no.
I tried that once, and I got something going, but it just never was robust.
Yeah, it's definitely better now. Mine's now 2.5 years old, and it's definitely super great, and it rises really well. But it took probably about a year before it was really good. Yeah, so now what I use is it's a quick sourdough recipe that has a little bit of yeast in it, just enough to help it rise quickly. So I get a loaf of bread in 3 hours.
Yeah.
And to me, that's like completely worth it. I don't want to have to do, you know, 8 to 12 hours of work to get a loaf of bread.
Right.
I do 3 hours of work and get 2 loaves of bread.
Right.
This is great.
Yeah.
So, but my favorite thing to do with the sourdough starter is I make pancakes every Sunday. And it's, I had never had better pancakes in my life. And I am a person who's spent many a Sunday morning trying to find the perfect pancake recipe. And this is just.
Yeah. I like making pancakes.
Yeah.
Mine too.
They're just great.
I was really happy because I stopped eating milk, mm-hmm. and so I stopped eating pancakes, and yeah. then I found a sourdough recipe yeah. that didn't have any milk, and because nice. The sourdough is acidic, it kind mm-hmm. of cuts the baking powder, so. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, mine definitely has a lot of milk in it.
Yesterday I had some banana pancakes uh-huh. with yeah. raspberry jam. They were delicious.
So good. Yeah, I put banana in my, the sourdough recipe, or the sourdough pancake recipe I have is from King Arthur. It's their mm-hmm. basic, like right. classic
yeah.
waffle pancake yeah. recipe. But when I make it, I mash some bananas, I do cinnamon and vanilla, and then I do their recipe the way they call it for it.
Very nice.
Just so good.
Yeah.
It's great. So yeah, I do the pancakes. I've made pretzels a few times with it.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly.
I like those pretzels too.
Pretzels yeah. are really, really fun to make. They take a little bit of time and a little bit of extra energy, but they're just delicious.
Have you made pretzel hot dogs?
No.
I'm a big fan. You just wrap the little pretzel yeah. around the hot dog and bake them.
Oh my goodness. And I know this wouldn't work for you, but I feel like I would have to throw like a slice of cheese in
there. Well, totally. Some cheddar.
So good. Maybe I'd like poke a hole through the hot dog and stick the cheese in.
Yes,
the hot dog.
Exactly. Oh. Yep.
Everything's
like
changing.
They used to do with those crescent rolls.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah,
better.
Yeah. Way better.
Is your mouth watering yet? If you're looking for some guidance and inspiration to help you get started on a sourdough bread baking journey, check out the show notes for lots of resources to help you get started. And over on the show's Instagram page, you'll find lots of pictures and videos cataloging the many sourdough recipes I test out on my family.
I've found that there were so many things from my childhood that I remember reading somewhere in college, that there was this sort of interesting generational thing with Italian families, that sort of like the first generation that came over with all of their recipes. Mm-hmm. And the next generation discovered all of the American
conveniences
and simplicities. So when I was growing up, and I hope my mom doesn't take offense to this because she listens, but a lot of what we ate was more convenience food than from scratch. And part of that was because she had three kids to feed every night. Right. You know, you can't be hand making all of your food. But I feel like when we had cookies, unless it was a holiday, we were probably getting cookies that, you know, we bought the cookie dough. Mm-hmm. Or if we were having bread, we were buying bread and loaves. We weren't, mm-hmm. like, I don't know that I ever made bread when I was a child with my mom. Maybe, oh, you know what? We got, like, Amish friendship bread a few times. Uh-huh. Have you ever gotten that?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was real gross until I started doing sourdough starters. And then I was like, oh, I could see how that would not be completely nasty. But when you're passing it between so many people, it seems like it's probably not totally hygienic.
I don't know.
I mean, if you got yeast in there and it's fermenting, it's probably
exactly.
okay. But yeah, I think that now that I am making a lot more things on my own, making cookies from scratch and bread from scratch and things like that, and I think to myself, oh, this is just so much better.
Yeah.
It tastes so much better.
Yeah.
But there is that time factor of, you know, yeah. so unless you do it as a hobby, it's completely unrealistic to, you know, like.
Right. Well, and just having ingredients in the house. But
yeah.
My mom always made things mm-hmm. from scratch. I mean, yeah. she didn't always make bread from, but she made bread and she made mm-hmm. cookies always.
Yeah.
Desserts always from scratch.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember when I lived in North Carolina, my neighbor invited me over for dinner or something mm-hmm. and I made dessert and she's mm-hmm. like, you just had these ingredients in your house, right? You know, like flour and yeah, I'm like. Always.
Of course.
Every
yes.
day.
Yeah. My mom did, to her credit, she did always have all the ingredients to yeah. make a good dessert,
right.
To make cookies or to make.
Yeah.
That stuff was always in the house. And I think that's important for, if you have children, for them to see these are the staples that we keep in our home.
Right.
So that we can make certain things. And almost every day, Emma will come up to me and be like, Mommy, I want to make mm-hmm. blank. And it's either a food item or a craft item or, you know, whatever. But I wasn't intentionally trying to turn her into a maker, but she just observed it enough that
right.
she was like, well, this is just what you do. You make things.
Right. Right.
It's so nice to have, it's like to hear her say, like, I want to make this.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I can't say no to her when she says, I want to make blank. All right. We're making cookies. We're making ice cream. We're
right.
making French fries.
Right.
Like, and we have a little garden out front. So as soon as she heard that I had planted potatoes, like, when are we making French fries? We have to wait for them to be ready to harvest. So
that's pretty fun.
Now they're ready to harvest, so we're having French fries tonight, right? And ice cream, right? Okay. So just nice to be able to give her that.
Yeah, it is. I think my mom is a maker, right? Mm-hmm. My mom likes to sew, and she doesn't knit so much, but she knows how, and mm-hmm. she likes to make good dinners, and
she has all those beautiful flowers on her.
Oh yes, she's a gardener.
Which, yes, her garden. I should really talk to her about her garden.
Yeah, and my sisters and brother are all mm-hmm. kind of makers too. Yeah. As I said, my sister quilts, and she lately. She did a lot of cross-stitch, but she didn't see well enough to do the cross-stitch anymore. She lately took a course on, like, using discarded metal to, like, make sculptures. And
interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Cool stuff. And she did a lot of decoupage, mm-hmm. like, with furniture and mm-hmm. other things. And then my second sister, she did a lot of cake decorations. Mm-hmm. And for a while she was doing those cake pops and the decorated cake pops. And she's really into decorating and entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my brother, he's a maker. I don't know exactly what he makes.
But I know he's a maker.
He's making lately, yeah.
It's sort of part of your DNA.
yeah. Which is nice. I was like, I need my thing. What am I going to do?
Yeah. So I set myself apart from the pack. I know what that's
which
like.
Which nobody else really bakes. Not bread. Beth bakes cakes and stuff, and not that she doesn't. But she was not the expert bread baker, mm-hmm. right? So I could be like, okay, this can be my thing.
Yep. I'm trying to think in my family. I remember having different things that I was really passionate about as I was growing up. And then one or both of my brothers picking those things up because they were like, oh, Jen's doing this. I want to do it too. And then they would like very quickly become better at it than me. And I would completely lose interest in the thing, you know, and just be like, I'm not going to do this anymore. So I started trying to learn guitar when I was like maybe 9 or 10 years mm-hmm. old. And my brother Chuck picked it up. And now he's a professional musician, you know, and I sort of like occasionally very privately will play some guitar mm-hmm. and sing for my own benefit. I don't think it was until I was in my late 20s that I really found the things that I was like, these are the things I'm really, really proficient at.
Yeah.
I'm very good at. And it really ended up coming down to the knitting and baking. Those are like the two things that I'm better at than most of my family, if not all of my family. And it's nice to be able to be like, okay, these are my things. It's very relieving.
Right. You know? Although, isn't it funny that you still, as an adult, feel the need to compete with your siblings, right?
I think that's just going to always be there. I very much feel that, and I'm sure they feel that towards me, too. And I think, like, when I spend time with them, and I don't know if this is the case for you with your siblings, but when I spend time with them, we all behave in ways that is, like, for one another's benefit or for one another's detriment. You know, sort of, like, we behave in ways that are specifically
part of that family pattern and not part of your everyday life.
Yeah, right? And I remember saying to my sister-in-law, Diane, like, this can't be how my brother Chuck actually is, right? This can't be. You are a brilliant, hilarious, upbeat woman. And there's no... And she was like, yeah, when you guys are together, you act like siblings. And my husband Joe was there with us. And he was like, yeah, Diane and I have to sort of ignore you guys when you're together because you turn into just siblings and it's and that rivalry and that competition comes out in weird ways.
Yeah.
And I have not yet figured out a way to turn it off.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll come in time.
I find it funny because in other aspects of my life, I'm a leader and mm-hmm. I'm someone that people listen to and mm-hmm. look to say, okay, what should we do next? And in my family, like if we're planning something, even if I try, I can't get anyone to like follow my idea, right? Mm-hmm. We have very... Yeah. designated, in particular, my second sister is the social director, and if she's not organizing it, then it probably isn't going to happen.
Yeah,
And if I try to organize something, then no. If it doesn't include her, maybe I can pull it off.
But. Yeah. I find that as the oldest and only female in my family, the planning of events usually falls to me, the emotional support roles fall to me.
Yeah.
But if anything needs to get done, right now my mom's trying to sell her house mm-hmm. in New Jersey, and everything having to do with that process, talking to the lawyer, talking to the realtor, I'm not involved in that at all. But there are certain things that, like, it's obvious who is going to be the leader in this task.
Which I guess makes it easier so you're not always jostling for doing the same things.
Yeah. But it's interesting, those sibling dynamics.
Yeah.
They just play out over time. I don't know if and when those ever really change.
Yeah. No, I think they change over time, but I don't think it ever goes away.
Yeah. It's odd because there aren't, I can't think of any other relationships in my life that have those types of tensions. It's odd. But, I don't know, maybe once my kids get older.
Right. And it must be different. I mean, my siblings and I don't. I mean, some people live, you know, in the same town with their siblings, and I don't. So we don't see each other all that often. We talk to each other. But I think maybe that keeps you stuck in the relationship when you don't spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, it's sort of like traveling back in time.
So you don't ever evolve together into a new relationship.
I wonder if that's what it is. Because, yeah, my brother, my youngest brother lives in New Jersey, and the other one lives in D.C., and we see each other for major holidays or big family events, and that's really it. And we talk on the phone occasionally, but mostly we talk through my mom.
What's so-and-so doing?
And often it's unsolicited. Like, not that I don't care what my brothers are doing, but my mom will tell me what they're doing before I've even had a chance to ask. Huh. So she's just sort of like the
connector.
The person who disseminates all of the information is needed.
Yeah.
So sometimes I wonder, like, how much of their lives am I getting to hear about?
Right.
And how much am I not getting to hear about? And should I just call them and get the information straight from them? But it's so much easier to just have it sort of funneled that way.
I don't know. My grandmother on my dad's side, she lived in Georgia and we lived in Massachusetts, so she was far away. But when we would talk to her on the phone, every time you told her about something that you were doing, she would respond by telling you about one of your cousins, right? Like, oh, I'm singing in this concert. Well, Brenda... And usually it was something better, right?
Oh my goodness.
And my cousins lived far away, so we didn't see each other very much. Mm-hmm. But when we met each other, it turned out that she was doing the same thing to them.
Yeah.
Brenda was hearing about Joanne doing...
Jeez. I wonder what that is.
Yeah.
Because I do think that one of the things with older family members that I have is I've heard them say, like, oh, I really want to make sure that the next generation is close with one another. So I almost wonder if it's like a... You know, well, I need to tell you about what the other one's doing.
To communicate,
so that you know what they're doing and that you have some sort of vested interest in that person's life as well. But what it inadvertently does is make you,
There was some resentment.
Resent and jealous of, like, how much more this person seems to love them than you.
You care about what they're doing.
Yeah. Like, I just told you about this thing that's going on with me and all you want to do is tell me about that.
Yeah.
So I definitely feel that.
Our delightful little chat about knitting and baking got a bit heavy there, huh? Navigating family dynamics is a challenge, no matter how near or far you live. I was glad to hear so much of my own experience reflected back in Jo's story. To wrap things up, I asked Jo what she enjoys most about making.
One of the things I like most about making, particularly about knitting, is I have something physical to show for the time that I spent. Mm-hmm. I think there are so many other things in life, from housework to child raising to my normal job, where, you know, you can do something and you go back an hour later and it's basically undone.
Yeah.
Whereas knitting, I spend time and I put time in, and I have something, right? A physical object that I will have for a long time. And, you know, as we were talking about before, often it has memories interwoven into it of what was going on at the time that I was making it, where I was, how I was feeling, what I was watching. Mm-hmm. So that's what I like most about making.
One of the developments I have enjoyed most in the past few years is that I can finally share my making life with my brothers in a way that they can personally enjoy. I've knit items for them and my parents over the years, but there's nothing quite like a handmade item for a brand new baby. Now that I have nieces, it feels like less of a competition and more of a way to support my siblings. And now I'd like to tell you about something I made this month. I was inspired while editing this episode and made the pretzel dogs that Jo recommended. And the dough recipe is so forgiving that I was even able to get my 4-year-old in on the action. She loved all of the steps and helping me time out the baking soda water bath part of the process. I didn't have any hot dogs on hand, but I did have some marvelous ginger and garlic sausages from a local farm that were perfect. We snuggled up to enjoy our pretzel-wrapped sausages and introduced the kids to the 1986 Don Bluth classic, An American Tale. It was a perfect evening. Well, that brings us to the end of this month's episode. You can find show notes, lots of fun links, and other extras for all of the show's episodes over at htmamcast.com. Find us on Instagram at How to Make a Memory. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider heading over to iTunes to rate and review so more folks like yourself can find the show. Our logo is by Becky Carpenter. Our music is by Chuck Salamone. We get system admin support from Greg Thole. Now, go make something for someone you love.